Hi, Brendan.
Hello, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast is back. It really, really is this time. Episode 177. I apologize, sort of, for enjoying myself.
Never apologize for that, Alan.
And not having a podcast last week. I was in Norway, of all places, in the kind of middle of winter. So...
Once it wasn't my fault, we didn't record.
Yeah. So it was a fun time. It was really interesting. I was there with Julie, and we were visiting actually both guests of the podcast, Cordelia and Jürgen, who are friends of ours that live there. And I figured we might be able to do a podcast there, but as it turns out, the internet was a little spotty where we were, as we were in there. Part of the trip we'd spent in their kind of winter cabin, which I think is great because they had always described it as, oh, we're going to go to the cabin for the next week. And I assumed it was, the cabin that was on their lake that we had visited like right after they'd gotten married. No, that's their summer cabin. So of course they have a winter cabin, which is separate. So that's a thing, having both. I don't know. My summer cabin and winter cabin are also it's just my house if I turn the heater on or use the pool. But yeah, summer cabins and winter cabins are a thing in Norway. And so I thought it would be cool to write down a few things and not things while I was on the trip. And I actually had a pretty long list, and I had to pare it down because I didn't want to take up too much of the show.
Because
we definitely have stuff to talk about this week, so I want to get into that. I would say the kind of the most kind of striking thing while I was there was how cold it was. Like I said, we were there in the it's February, it's genuinely winter, and it being someone from California, I'm not used to seasons, and I'm also not used to temperatures below freezing, which it was pretty much every night for sure. It was below freezing during the day, one of the days we were there, and it was maybe like a 12 degree temperature range the entire time we were there. It was between about, you know, 6 or 7 above zero to about 5 below zero pretty much every day, which was interesting. Definitely something to kind of keep in mind if you're ever going to be out there in February. But one other thing which was interesting while we were out there was we actually went to a town that we'd talked about on the show, the town of Rjukan, which is the that's the town in the valley that is the hills are so steep that during the winter it gets no sunlight. So that was very strange. I mean, we weren't there in the absolute dead of winter, so I don't know how dark it actually gets, but we were there around lunchtime, pretty much around lunchtime, so the sun is as high as it's going to get in the sky. And in certain parts of the town, because we stopped and, like, you know, had a bit of a snack and walked around a little bit, the sunlight does not reach some of the buildings that are in this one part of the town. And that's in February, so it's a month and a half or so after the darkest part of winter. So I could definitely see how this could be really disheartening and not awesome without without any sun. Although it's not as if the town is completely, like, isolated. I mean, we were able to drive into the valley from two different routes. We drove in and drove out a different route. I mean, it would still suck to have to go into that one, like, town square where the mirrors point the sun at them, as we discussed in episode, insert episode here. but yeah, that was a little strange. So, not seeing the sun is not a thing. One other thing on the list was there's kind of a big cross-country skiing and hiking culture in Norway. There's a very outdoorsy kind of culture in Norway, which is cool. But there's a chocolate snack, which is wholly based on all of their marketing has gotten them to the point that this is the thing that you take when you go out on a cross-country ski with the family or a hike. And they even have like little hiking maps on the inside of the wrapper, but it's chocolate. It's essentially like a Kit Kat. It's cookie wafers that are covered in chocolate. They're even in like packs of four and you break them off. But that's kind of cool and kind of a thing. The thing that's not a thing about it is that is the name. It's called Kvikk Lunsj in Norwegian, which translates to, unsurprisingly, quick lunch. It's not energy food. It's not like, it doesn't have like electrolytes or anything. It's just
But that's what plants crave, Alan. It's electrolytes.
It's chocolate. It's chocolate. It's really a Kit Kat ripoff. It's really what it is. But I guess the marketing has gone a long way there. Another not thing about marketing around there is, I guess, for whatever reason, the scale of how good something is a 1 to 6 scale. And I don't fully understand why it's 1 to 6, but what that one of the things that comes out of that is the way they will show like, oh, this was rated the highest, is that they'll have a representation of the 6. But the way that it was most commonly shown is it's a die with the 6 on top, the 6 pips on top. And it shouldn't be a gamble if this is good or not. I don't understand why they used a die. It's like, this is not a game of chance. It's either it's good or it's bad or it's something in the middle, but it's not a...
But taste is personal, so like you don't know. It could be bad to you. There's pretty good odds this is going to taste like a 6.
And then the other not thing about this, and I had never heard this, is that, but so Cordelia and Jürgen's son won a cross-country skiing competition, and he's 6, so I'm like, wow, is he training a lot? Is that really do you go to the cabin and ski a lot? And they do, but it's not like he's exceptionally athletic necessarily, because the winner is determined by taking all of the times of all of the racers, and then whoever is closest to the average time won.
Nice.
It's literally the most un-American thing I can think of.
Competitive socialism?
Yeah. Because how do you control for that? I mean, what And how sad must that person that came in first feel? But I guess there's this concept of ideal time. It's not the best time. It's the ideal one. So it's the one that's the closest to the average, and the average is the ideal, which brings up a lot of interesting things about averages and statistics and whether averages are even good things or real things or representative things. So I think that's sort of interesting. But him winning, sure, let's give it to him, because he was a good kid.
That's better than every kid getting a trophy.
Okay, fair enough. Yes. Which is quickly becoming the American thing.
That's the way to stoke American exceptionalism. Everyone's a winner, and all your opinions matter and are correct. No. This is how you have Donald Trump likely to be the Republican candidate for president.
Oh, God. Yes. That was also a fun conversation every time I had it. Thankfully, I was able to avoid most of these conversations, but every plane ride, every time I was hanging out when you would hear people in English, which was actually quite a bit. So that was kind of cool, was that I never felt like I would be lost. You just have the one awkward sentence where you have to say, I actually don't speak Norwegian, and then everyone speaks English. And usually with me anyway, they just skip that question. Whereas with Julie, they would usually persist like one more sentence in Norwegian. It's like, are you sure? You really look like you're Norwegian. Are you sure? Yeah.
Your shields were up.
Yes, definitely. Speaking of shields, one of the coolest things I did on the trip was that one of Cordelia's friends is a blacksmith, like a journeyman blacksmith. So we went to her shop and she showed me all of the, you know, the tools and the forge and everything else. And I had just taken the blacksmithing classes at the Crucible, you know, a month ago. So it was really funny to kind of connect over that and then commiserate over the same things. Like the thing that I found the most difficult to do, which is they're called C scrolls. They're the letter C, but you do them on the anvil and you have to make the curves like symmetric and everything else. And she's just like, I hate that stuff. I'm like, awesome. All right. I can do this. I can do this blacksmithing stuff. But the interesting thing about her blacksmithing is that there's so many older buildings in Oslo that have like iron gates and signs and stuff like that, that all of that has to be done and worked on by blacksmithing. And so, you know, there's a lot of that work to do. And it's really fascinating being in a country where I was just, you're just at like some, you know, random part in the street, and they have the things where they say like established in what year, and like everything is before, you know, America. It was just this random store I walked through and it was like, this building was erected in 1760. I'm like, this building is older than the United States of America. This place where I just bought like socks. Are you kidding me? So yeah, there's perspective. You get perspective when you're in another country. So we're going to stay in other countries, talking about perspectives in other countries. We're going to move over. We're going to bid Norway adieu. Actually, I don't know how to say goodbye in Norway. I know how to say hello, which is really just hi. At least in all the... You know, hollow, I guess. I don't know. There's kind of a slightly different pronunciation, but it's very English sounding. But anyway, we're going to move from Norway and move over to China, where they're building a huge radio telescope. It's going to be 500 meters wide. You can tell I'm still kind of in Norway mode because I'm fine with using the metric system.
Yeah, it's 1,640 feet.
Nicely done. Nicely done. 500 meters wide, and it's meant specifically to be a radio telescope. So it's going to be picking up like radio transmissions or other noise and things, and hopefully interpreting them to be you know, things that won't come and, you know, destroy the White House with a crazy green beam of light, ideally. Anyway, but it's cool that they're building it, but they're also they have to resettle a few people because there's people that
that's
live
putting it lightly.
There's people that live in that area of China, and it's 1,000 families. It's something like 9,000 people, which is not a thing. And worse than that is how much money they're giving them. You know, the amount of money they're giving them to uproot their lives and move to somewhere else in China is like the equivalent of, I think it was $1,200.
No, no, you're not giving him credit, Alan. It was $1,800.
Okay.
Per person. Per person. So if you have a family of four,
yeah,
that's more than if you lived alone. It's really fucked up.
Yeah. $1,200 or $1,800. It's, yeah. I don't know how far that would necessarily go in China, but maybe not necessarily.
I'm guessing it's not going to be far enough.
Right. I mean, maybe it's far enough that you can't throw stuff at the radio telescope, which is probably the how they came up with the number of $1,800.
Well, yeah, they're in a 3-mile radius around it.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, because the deal is that it's a radio telescope, so you can't have like a cell phone on you or anything that would emit any kind of radiation, because that's what would be picked up by this telescope. So I think it's an interesting kind of technological project. I think it's a bummer that they're resettling that many people, or maybe resettling is the wrong term. It's more like kicking them out and giving them hush-hush money, it certainly has happened. There is a precedent for that in China, because they ended up resettling like a lot many more people to build the Three Gorges Dam and all of that project a few years ago. I remember when that was in the news, and
a million people.
There's people that live in these places, and I, you know, this is...
Well, it was nice of them to relocate them for the dam. Like, they could have just built the dam and then filled it.
I guess if there's an upside to this project is that with any luck, they're going to reuse the radio telescope array for when they... do a GoldenEye style James Bond movie again.
Yeah, it's time. And remake GoldenEye.
that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that.
If they can redo Red Dawn with Korea instead of the USSR,
yeah,
then you could redo GoldenEye with China instead of Russia.
I mean, GoldenEye, the location in GoldenEye isn't in Russia either, right? That's in like...
No, it's not.
South America, or...
Was it at Arecibo, or was
yeah,
it...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in Puerto Rico.
Yeah. Russia, Arecibo, yeah, well, yeah, they're very similar. Puerto Rico, yeah.
It's near Cuba. That's like geographically... No. It all falls apart. Don't do it. Stop remaking movies. I just saw the trailer for the new Ghostbusters movie, and I did not laugh once. That is not a good sign.
No, it's a little flat. I'm hoping it's not just because it's PG-13, but I was thinking that might be a factor. But
because that was my big complaint about the original Ghostbusters, was that, oh, it's fine that it's funny, but the ghosts don't look CGI enough.
Just
to be clear, my it has nothing to do with it being female Ghostbusters. I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah.
It's that it doesn't look funny.
I did kind of smile at, what was it, The Power of Patty Compels You, that moment. But that's the latent Catholic in me, and the Exorcist movies, which, oh, anyway, let's not stay there. Let's keep moving. From one scary thing to a slightly different scary thing. In France, they're going full Snowpiercer and making pasta out of. I forget which insect it is, but it's definitely insects. And we talked about that in on a different show where they were making and it wasn't necessarily in France, but there was a company that was making insect-based flour, and it becomes kind of a high protein thing, because generally flour has no protein. It's essentially just a, it's wheat, so it's a carb. But making, you know, you dry it and pulverize it, and you know, and it's just a flour that ends up being high in protein. So this one French company had a request to make a pasta that had, I think it's like 40%. It's not 100% insect flour. It's like 40% of whatever this is plus some other stuff. And I think it ends up being like I forget if it was like a gluten-free kind of pasta or if it was just being marketed as a higher protein pasta versus something that would have had like an egg base. But I mean, you could certainly do either of those, but
it's only 7% insect flour.
Oh, well, that's not even that much.
It's for flavor, I guess. You can make cricket crepes.
Right. It's not. That was the thing is I was when I saw the headline, I thought it was going to be like a much higher percentage of it. But that is just like kind of a flavor.
Like protein enrichment and flavoring.
Right. 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 But the French company that's making these completely sold out of them and is struggling to keep up with demand. So they have to find, you know, alternate sources for their flour. I think this is an interesting trend. It's really, you know, all jokes aside, it's really the most abundant animal life on Earth.
So, you know,
no, go ahead.
I think the reason they might be having trouble keeping up with production is just because it's one person company.
Oh, really?
It's one lady.
She's just mixing it up, you know, in her kitchen.
I guess there's two. There's the owner and then there's the person who does it. And they're talking about hiring a second person.
Wow. Okay.
So there is a demand.
Yes. Yes. Right, right. It's more than
probably
zero.
Probably not huge.
Okay. I have to read these articles a little more closely.
She does make, what is it, 880 pounds a week. Okay. So, but one person doing that is impressive.
Yeah. Wow. So 4% of that is insect. So 4%,
7%.
7% of 800 is like 56. So 56 pounds of insect flour. That's a lot of insects. I mean, I'm assuming she's not doing the insect flour producing as well, but I don't know. Maybe. Who knows? Who knows? I'm sure they know, and
I'll leave that to them.
Maybe there'll be a better article that I'll read. Maybe a little closer to get a little more of a sense of how the labor breakdown is for them.
It's still impressive.
Yes, yes.
And probably the future of food.
Oh, well, we're going to stick with exoskeleton kinds of based stories and move to the company ReWalk, which I'm not sure if we talked about on the show or not, but it's a company that makes a walking exoskeleton. And I think it's made for people with spinal cord injuries that have lost the ability to move below the waist or kind of slightly higher in the chest. You have to have some amount of arm mobility, it sounds like, for it to work. But it's essentially a brace that you kind of climb into or are lifted into, and then the legs are powered, and there's some amount of kind of extra support that is able to hold your body weight up so you can be upright and walk. And they've been kind of testing this in prototypes for a while, and it was just cleared by the Food and Drug Administration for home use. And I also found an article a little bit ago saying that it's not only has it been cleared for home use, it's actually been requested by someone, and the insurance company for that person was ordered to pay up to buy the exoskeleton for them. And I think it ends up being like $40,000 or $50,000 per exoskeleton for this. This is 100% a thing.
Thanks, Obama.
Right. This is the Affordable Care Act working for you to have exoskeletons. I'm 100% down with this.
If you have spinal injuries, everybody needs an exoskeleton to walk.
Yes, right. Walking is my pre-existing condition, which prevents me from having an exoskeleton.
They can't deny you for they can deny you for that one. And they probably should.
Right. It's cool to hear about it for home use, because I know a while ago, I think when we talked about exoskeletons, it was for exoskeletons for soldiers, if I'm remembering right, because we were using the power armor kind of angle for it.
Yes.
The idea was that you, if you were a soldier, you could carry a lot more on your body, on your person, by having the suit on. Of course, now they've outsourced all of those to the to those dog based robot things, those horrible things. the runs faster than, you know, like twice as fast as a human, and you know.
Yeah, I saw an article recently that said that they made those things faster and quieter, and it was not comforting at all.
I did see another story. It's funny because I saw a story this week that was those dogs are it was a video of an actual dog like really barking its head off at the robot.
As it,
like,
should.
Even dogs don't like robot dogs. So
no, Terminator taught us that, right? didn't they use dogs in the Resistance?
Right, exactly.
To fight Skynet.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell the Terminators from the people. Thank
exactly.
you, James Cameron.
Well, we're going to shift gears entirely. Well, I guess it's not that entirely. I guess Skynet is likely going to come from some from computer-based thing. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be the thing that controls nuclear launches. It's most likely going to be something like Facebook. And Facebook was in the news this week for doing a bunch of web page takedowns. Thankfully, not the Not a Thing podcasts. So if you would like to like or share our post, do so from our Facebook page. You can tweet at us. We're still happy to do that. Our reptilian overlords have not stopped the internet, at least for us, Facebook has stopped the internet for a bunch of marijuana dispensaries that have Facebook fan pages. And this sounds a little it was kind of surprising to the companies that got shut down, because many of them, if not all of them, were are legally operating businesses now that marijuana is legal recreationally in a bunch of states. And certainly legal medicinally in even more states. A lot of those companies, rightfully so, have made Facebook fan pages in order to publicize themselves and otherwise have a presence on social media. But Facebook has invoked their terms of service to close those things down, and they're citing that. Their terms of service includes recreational drugs as a deal breaker for having a fan page, and it's an interesting case because the legality of marijuana specifically is different in different states and certainly in different countries where Facebook might operate. So they have to apply their laws in kind of a lowest common denominator fashion, which is potentially a bad precedent to set, because there's a lot of there's a lot of things that, you know, if it's illegal in one country, you don't want illegal in all countries, just because of that. Otherwise, it does become that lowest common denominator issue. So it's interesting to see how Facebook handles this kind of moving forward. I know LinkedIn had a similar prohibition because they were closing people's LinkedIn profiles if they were sex workers. And even though sex work is legal in certain countries and certain areas, even in the United States, they were closing those pages down and claiming it was a terms of service issue, similarly to how Facebook is. But they later amended it because for LinkedIn, you have to be or you don't have to be 18 to have a LinkedIn page. And they didn't want to run afoul of having people underage connecting with sex workers. And that was
endorsing the wrong skills.
Oh, my skills are all wrongly endorsed. You put one thing on a web page once and all of a sudden you know HTML? I don't know.
Not quite the skill I was thinking of, but okay. I guess that's fair for you. You're not a sex worker as far as your LinkedIn profile is concerned.
Right. But it does become another thing about, you know, because the internet is not, you know, just in the state of California or what, however we'd like to restrict it, it's a global thing. You know, that was the whole thing, the World Wide Web. And so, you know, it does call into question, like, when things are legal in one region and not in another, how do you kind of work with that and how do you play with that? I don't think that's necessarily being discussed by Facebook. It's just being enforced. So that's something that hopefully some folks can discuss. And I'd love for the Not a Thing podcast to be the catalyst for that. So please, you know, talk to people, let us know if you have thoughts on it and would like to talk about it. We'd love to have you on the show. That would actually be kind of a cool guest spot, I think.
It's a thing.
Kind of sticking in...
The sticky icky.
there's a company called Last Chance Canine, and they furnish dog and kind of handler teams specifically to do like drug sniffing, and you know, this is not a private contractor that's selling their services to the government, or like a transportation agency that is using drug sniffing dogs. They're selling their services to parents that are trying to figure out if their kids are doing drugs. It's the article made it seem like it was specifically even for marijuana. Again, this is one of those things where marijuana is definitely on the highest kind of rate of change legal wise in the country that it's ever been, I think. Having a company that does this is really interesting. But the way that it does it and the way that the article kind of laid out how it is really I think the name is really appropriate for the company. It's like Last Chance Canine. This is like the last chance for the kid that's going to get busted. But really, I think it's more the last chance for the parent to determine like what how they want their relationship with their child.
Yeah, I don't know how you come back from that.
Yeah, that's
you really brought a stranger and a dog into my room.
Right, right. I mean, intentions, good intentions aside, it's such a it's one thing for the parent to kind of snoop in the room, because you can say, oh yeah, this is my house. I, you know, trotted out on every sitcom ever. It's like, if you're going to live under my house, you're going to live under my rules. You know,
if you're going to live under your house,
under the roof, under my roof. I don't watch enough TV. I don't watch a lot of sitcoms actually anymore. So
yeah, it was more of a 90s thing.
Yeah, it really was. Fuller House, I'm sure not there watching was, it. Not a
no.
thing. Not a thing.
No, not a thing.
Nostalgia.
Where's my Fuller Roseanne?
Yeah. Nostalgia is a wonderful thing. It should not mean that everything gets a TV show.
Nostalgia is something that's great at enhancing things. Mm-hmm. It should not be the entire reason for a thing.
Hear, hear.
That's why the new Star Wars was so good, is it played on the nostalgia, but also was good on its own merits.
Out on Blu-ray April 5th.
Yeah. I'm pre-ordering tomorrow.
But I think it was mentioned by someone who was quoted in the article about, if you're a parent and you do that, you have to be ready to accept the consequences of that relationship with your child, like really, really changing. Cause you know, what else, what other, to what, where is the end of this, this arms race of surveillance and setting things up. It really is kind of above and beyond when the snooping is outsourced to a company.
Yeah. This really makes me uncomfortable as a concept.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a good idea, but if you're a parent and you want to train a drug sniffing dog yourself, that's fine. Keep it in house.
Right. 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 Right.
Although I guess to do that, you have to buy a lot of drugs. Okay. Maybe you shouldn't do that.
I thought that was another interesting thing about it, is that when the drugs are found, the canine company isn't a government entity. They don't have any kind of like disposal facilities or anything like that, or they don't treat it as a crime, which I think is to their credit, because they could easily call the cops on these kids or families and turn it into a legal problem. They're at least keeping it within the family dynamic, so it's up to the parents about what happens to them. But what happens is the parents end up with all these drugs.
I just had a great idea for this service. You could use it for when you, like, if you hit a joint somewhere and you can't remember where you put it, or if you lost your pipe and you can't remember where you put it, you hire these guys and they come bring the drug sniffing dog, and then they find it for you, and then you just keep it. You're like, oh no, I don't have a kid. This is mine. Thanks. I've been looking for that for months.
Wow. I don't.
The system works.
I guess if that would have to mean that the price was for finding it would be less than the price of replacing it.
Yeah, I guess it'd be need to be. I don't know. Bongs are expensive.
Yeah.
You might break even.
A very interesting kind of prospect there. the distracted drug sniffing dogs.
You know what they should make is a company that has key sniffing dogs, and they could go find your keys when you lose them.
Oh yeah, yeah. They're trained to find a metal. Although now that I think about it, I remember there was a child pornography case not too long ago, and the investigators supposedly had a SD card sniffing dog, because it was trained to find like media devices like USB cards and things like that, in order to find all the evidence when they were shaking down a suspect. So I think it's possible. Most keys are made of brass, so I'm sure they could train a dog to find brass.
I lost my bullets. Everything sniffing dogs. That's the future. Sniffing dogs. Terminator sniffing dogs.
Right.
Drug sniffing dogs.
Yeah.
Key sniffing. Yeah. That's, I'm going to invest in sniffing dogs. Just push my 401k to the sniffing dogs index.
Well, one thing that we will hopefully not be able to invest in anymore is, you know, parents paying their kids to change all the clocks in the house. I know that was a
thing. You got paid?
Not very much. But I do remember one year we were paid, I think it was like a quarter for every clock that we set in the house.
So a clock costs the same as a tooth.
But the reason we bring that up is because the California legislature is considering a bill which would abolish daylight saving time in California. So we would be like Hawaii or Arizona or like...
See, Maine. You had me with Hawaii. So, yeah, let's be more like Hawaii. Let's do Arizona. We don't need to be more like Arizona.
Here. Okay, all right. We'll stick with Hawaii on that one. But yeah, turning off daylight saving time, which is not a thing, and just having time like the way it works. I mean, time is kind of an arbitrary construct as it is.
Relative.
So why not have time kind of in a more normal fashion? At least we're staying on the hour boundary with the rest of the world. There are a few countries that use a half hour time zone. There's one in India, I believe, and Myanmar apparently, which is near India, so it might be related to that. But the time zone is on a half hour, and that's not a thing.
No.
But California not having to change their clocks, I'm supportive of this. I think it was silly to have it as soon as we figure out how to do lights.
You should be proud. It was proposed by an assemblyman from San Jose.
Yeah. San Jose, Silicon Valley, leading the charge. We'll see. I think it's still early. I don't know when it's up for debate, and I'm sure that'll become a ballot initiative. All I know is I hope it doesn't further break how time is told in computers. I do remember a while ago when Congress changed the daylight savings time weeks to extend daylight saving time. I think it was 2 weeks in each direction. So I oddly made it so there's more time in the year that is in daylight saving time than there is in standard time. But in any case, when they changed that, so many computers had their time zones that were hard-coded based on certain dates, and all of those had to be updated to deal with a change in the dates for when the clocks change. Hopefully undoing it completely does not cause a similar upheaval, unless I'm again working in that industry, in which case I would benefit from the extra work.
Is that really the work you want to be doing?
No, probably not. Probably not. I do remember around the year 2000, because my dad worked as a COBOL programmer at the time. He worked for banks, which is why they were still using COBOL, which is an amazingly old language. It stands for Common Business Oriented Language.
B-O-O-O.
But I remember him telling me he got many an extra hour of contracting in 1999 to get stuff written to understand that, you know, years have four digits and not two. So that was pretty impressive. Again, maybe not something you want to base a career on, but maybe a short-term gig, maybe. hopefully something that people have their careers based on is what's happening over with Apple and the FBI. This is something that's been in the news for a couple weeks, so I'm glad we were able to get it on the show. It's near and dear to everyone because it talks about terrorism, which you can pretty much be sure that people are universally against, but B, encryption, which I think the jury is still out for the government anyway, but a lot of people may like it. They just may not know enough about it or how to deal with it, but it's become in the news as a focus because the FBI is asking for the power to break into terrorist phones, and that all seems well and good. You know, you want to stop terrorism, you want to be able to get into phones, but what they want is they want Apple, anyway, in this case, to say that they will make essentially a version of their operating system or some other way to brute force break into an Apple iPhone. And Apple iPhones by default, I believe, have a protection where if you put the wrong password in, or if you're trying to guess a passcode of a phone, it delays you. It immediately, you know, it lets you try like three times, and then after the third time, it's like, okay, you have to wait a minute before doing it, or you have to wait 5 minutes or an hour. So it delays you if you're trying to do a brute force attack on a phone. And that's fine if you're someone, you know, your phone gets stolen, you don't want anyone to break into your phone. But it's not so fine if you're the FBI and you're trying to break into a phone specifically. And so it's kind of an important discussion. Are we going to say we will drop everything for law enforcement and the FBI in order to, you know, in this case, potentially stop terrorism, or really just do stuff for the FBI? Because as we've talked about in the past, the FBI's justification for different things is often murky and sometimes hidden. And that goes for a lot of other government three-letter agencies. Apple is taking a stand and saying that that it sets a dangerous precedent, and it really does. Personal data and integrity is something that people value, and compromising that in a way that is, you know, that is not narrow is a problem. Like if it were possible to let the FBI break into a specific phone at a specific time and not anyone else, then I think that would be something that people would be for. But this is compromising all phones everywhere, everybody's phone, and making them able to be broken into by by not only the FBI, but anyone that wants access to them. This is a thing. I think Apple is, originally they were really running alone on this. I think security folks and people that were like the EFF and really anyone that understands the, you know, the impact of it were for it, but most major companies were kind of not taking a stand, and that kind of changed in the last few days. That more companies are coming on board and saying that no, Apple's right about this.
Well, especially when the FBI screwed up and reset the password when they could have just skipped all this if they didn't do that. They locked themselves out of iCloud. That's on you. Yeah, you fucked up. This one gets away. Yeah. That doesn't get you the keys to the kingdom.
Well, it really is interesting. The companies that are coming out and people that are saying that, you know, Apple should bend and let law enforcement in. And some folks some companies have already made changes. So like, I know, Microsoft has come out and said that they would, you know, cooperate with law enforcement if that was the request for them. Amazon, is doing away with full encryption on their Kindle line, if I'm remembering correctly. I just read that this week. So, I mean, Apple is doing, I think, the right thing. They're doing a good thing by saying that they're choosing...
For once.
they're choosing, to not give the wide-reaching powers that the FBI is asking for, especially because the FBI is using what's called the All Writs Act. So if you see AWA in these things, that's what it's referring to. It's a kind of a vague law that says government should be able to write all writs applicable. Anything, essentially any law that it wants in order to prop up itself. So if there's a law that's missing, it should be able to write a law to make that work. It's roughly that. And they're saying that in this case because the government is saying, hey, we don't have a law saying that you can't, we will write a law essentially saying that you have to make your OS do what we want. This is kind of a weird law, or it sounds really weird. And that's because it's from 1790. It was when we didn't have a whole lot of laws yet. So making up new ones kind of sort of made sense. Not new ones willy nilly, which is kind of the way this is being applied. So hopefully this gets appropriate attention. It does seem like that Congress actually is, at least so far, kind of coming around on the side of Apple on this one. So it's good. It's nice to see a higher profile victory for encryption and personal data security. I don't know if I want to count that chicken before it's hatched yet, though. So it is still in committee. But I'm sure we'll talk about it in the coming weeks. If you, again, would like to talk about it with us, or if you have other stuff to talk about, other things to talk about, please let us know. We'd love to have you on the show as a guest. Guesting is a thing. Podcasting is, again, a thing. It's really good to be back, Brendan.
Good to have you back, Alan.
Excellent. I will talk to you next week.
Till next time.